We are reading Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 2, entitled Daksha Curses Lord Shiva, text number 29. Translation. Those who vow to worship Lord Shiva are so foolish that they imitate him by keeping long hair on their heads. When initiated into worship of Lord Shiva, they prefer to live on wine, flesh, and other such things. You can repeat. Those who vow to worship Lord Shiva are so foolish that they imitate him by keeping long hair on their heads. When initiated into worship of Lord Shiva, they prefer to live on wine, flesh, and other such things. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Indulging in wine and meat, keeping long hair on one's head, not bathing daily, and smoking ganja, marijuana, are some of the habits which are accepted by foolish creatures who do not have regulated lives. By such behavior, one becomes devoid of transcendental knowledge. In the initiation into the Shiva mantra, there are mudrikastaka, in which it is sometimes recommended that one make his sitting place on the vagina and thus desire nirvana or dissolution of existence. In that process of worship, wine is needed, or sometimes in place of wine, palm tree juice, which is converted into an intoxicant. This is also offered according to Shiva Agama, a scripture on the method of worshipping Lord Shiva. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Chananjana Shalakaya Chaksur Unmilitanjena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So we're hearing about a great sacrifice which took place long ago in the heavenly planets. The devas had been invited by Daksha to attend a sacrifice. And at that time, the organizer of the sacrifice, Daksha, was not satisfied with the behavior of Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva was his son-in-law. He had married Daksha's daughter, Parvati. And Daksha was so upset with the behavior of Lord Shiva that he pronounced that Lord Shiva should no longer be entitled to enjoy any offerings in the sacrifice. And after Daksha made this statement, then the followers of Lord Shiva, led by Nandeshwara, were very upset and they retaliated. And Nandeshwara in turn cursed Daksha that he would very soon have the head of a goat. And then he also cursed the followers of Daksha, who were the hereditary brahmanas, the jati brahmanas. And he cursed them that they would become practitioners of rituals, which were performed only for their bodily maintenance. And they would simply be interested in acquiring wealth, and they would not achieve liberation from the material existence. And after Nandeshwara had cursed the brahmanas like that, then Bhrigu Muni retaliated by making his curse against the followers of Lord Shiva. And his curse against the followers of Lord Shiva was that the followers of Lord Shiva would all become atheists. So this is the nature of the material world, that people like to seek revenge against people who don't give them, people who are offending them, you know, they want to take revenge, they want to retaliate. Everyone's involved in the working of karma, action and reaction, cursing and counter-cursing. This is all affairs of the material world. This is not really nothing transcendental in this. However, we see that there's truth in these curses, that the followers of Lord Shiva, that they, in general, they have become atheists, that they tend to all be Mayavadis. There, as it was mentioned yesterday, in the verse yesterday, it was said, Sashastra Paripantana, that they become diverted from scriptural injunctions. They don't follow the real scriptural injunctions, as we're hearing today, that the followers of Lord Shiva, that they will imitate Lord Shiva, and they will prefer to live on wine and flesh and other such impure things. They will not bathe regularly. They will not follow the Vedic principles. And we can see, actually, Bhrigu Muni's curse, it's certainly becoming true to a large extent, that the followers of Lord Shiva today, they do also tend to be to neglect the Vedic principles. Certainly, the curse of Bhrigu was justified because Nandeshwara was cursing the Brahmanas, and they were also not following the Vedic principles by their imitation of Lord Shiva. So when you neglect the Brahmanas and the Vedas, then that is atheism. And we see how Lord Buddha also taught this atheistic philosophy. And Lord Shiva himself also came in the Kali Yuga to teach the atheistic philosophy. Lord Shiva in Padma Purana describes to his wife Parvati that in the Kali Yuga he will come in the form of a Brahmana and he will teach a Gnostic philosophy. Mayavadam asat shastram prachanam bodha muchate. Mayeva vihitam devi kalo brahmana murtina. This is from Padma Purana. Lord Chaitanya quoted this verse on several occasions, especially to Prakashananda Saraswati and also to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, describing to them why Shankaracharya propagated this Mayavada philosophy. Shankaracharya is Lord Shiva. So Lord Shiva himself came to spread this philosophy of Mayavada. It is another atheistic philosophy, because they proclaim that when God comes into this material world, he takes a material form. And they proclaim that ultimately there is the absolute truth is Brahman, a oneness. Shankaracharya was fond of the aphorism Sarvam Kauvidam Brahma, that everything is Brahman. And they speak about this Kaivalya, this oneness. So this philosophy propounded by Lord Shiva in his form of Shankaracharya was the order of the Lord himself. It wasn't that Lord Shiva just decided to come and spread this philosophy on his own, but he was ordered. The Supreme Personality of Godhead ordered him that you go and you spread this philosophy in the Kali Yuga. And there was a good reason for it, because there was a necessity to bring back the Vedic scriptures. At that time, before Shankaracharya, the Vedic scriptures had been practically lost, and there was no more Vedic culture, and the Brahmanas had no position. The reason was because of Buddhism. Buddhism had become spread all over India. And why was Buddhism spread? Because there was degradation and corruption among the Brahmanas. The Brahmanas had become interested in materialistic gain, and they encouraged the people to perform animal sacrifice also in the name of Vedic scriptures. So while there is recommendation for animal sacrifice in the Vedic scriptures, such sacrifices are not allowed in the Kali Yuga, because in the Kali Yuga, the Brahmanas are not qualified. They don't have the power to properly recite the Vedic mantras. And for that reason, these sacrifices are prohibited. However, the Brahmanas were interested in their own material gain, and they were encouraging the people to perform all of these religious sacrifices because they could charge money for them, and in this way they could become rich. So this degradation and corruption of the Brahminical class was an emergency situation. Because it was an emergency situation, therefore the Lord Himself came in the form of Lord Buddha, and He had to lead the people away from the Vedas. By leading the people away from the Vedas, they would disregard the Brahmanas. During the times of the Brahmanas, there was the Varnashram Dharma system. The society was divided by caste. Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Sudra. So Lord Buddha preached against this division of society. And he declared that everybody is equal. Everyone is the same. Just like in communist countries, if you go to any communist country, they also have this philosophy that everyone is equal. Everyone is the same. But actually, we see wherever you go in the world, even in the communist countries, not everyone is equal. Some people are healthy and some are sick. Some people are intelligent and take good education and others do not. And some people are very expert in making wealth and becoming rich and others are not. You see that people are not equal materially. But spiritually, everyone is equal. So the real equality is not on the platform of the material body. The real equality is on the platform of the soul. Lord Buddha, however, was simply teaching everyone's equal. Everyone is the same. So people were happy to hear that. Give up the Brahmanas, give up the Vedas, and simply follow Lord Buddha. Lord Buddha was fulfilling a special purpose. He was leading people away from the Vedas. He was stopping the killing of the animals, and he was also giving faith to people who were basically atheistic, people who didn't believe in God. Because the people didn't have any belief in God, they simply had some faith in Lord Buddha. They saw his compassionate nature, and they followed him. But Lord Buddha did not teach the highest principles of religion. He simply taught ahimsa. Ahimsa is not the highest principle of religion. It is a sub-religious principle. But by teaching ahimsa, he showed his compassionate nature. He attracted many atheists and they followed him. And the teaching was spread all over India to such an extent that the Vedic culture was lost. So the Lord ordered Lord Shiva, the Supreme Personality of Godhead Narayan, ordered Lord Shiva, you go in the Kali Yuga and you trick the people and bring back the Vedas. You teach them this Asat Shastra. Don't teach them the real principle of religion. You teach them this Asat Shastra. And it's Prachanam Bodham. It's not open Buddhism. It's covered Buddhism. You teach them this Buddhism in a disguised form. This is Mayavada. But by Lord Shiva, Shankaracharya doing this, he did a great service for the Lord because he was able to bring back the Vedas. He tricked the Buddhists. He defeated them by his word jugglery. Even today, if you go in the Buddhist countries, in China and Japan and Thailand and Burma, the Buddhist monks are all wondering, how is it the Buddhists were so silly? How they could get defeated by Shankaracharya? How could he trick them? They thought that they didn't do good. They did something terrible. How they could be defeated? Even today, they're scratching their heads, trying to understand how the Shankaracharya could be so clever. But, you know, he is not an ordinary person. He is Lord Shiva himself. And he is empowered by the Lord to come and trick these people and to bring them back to the Vedic culture. He just made a little adjustment not Buddhism, covered Buddhism. What is the difference? That Lord Buddha, he taught the absolute truth was zero. The Buddhist philosophy is Vaidism, that everything is nothing. Everything is zero. Even the soul, they consider the soul to be material. If you talk to a Buddhist, they will say Buddha's philosophy is teaching about anatma, that there's no atma. Or if the atma, it is material and it can all be annihilated. And their goal is to annihilate everything. That they say everything is illusion. So they're sunyavadi. Huh? They want to make everything shunya, void. So the Buddha's teaching is the absolute truth is zero. Shankaracharya made a little adjustment. He made the absolute truth not zero, one. Just a little change. Yeah, Shankaracharya taught that the absolute truth is one. Everything is Brahman. Sarvam kalvi brahm idam brahma. That we are all, everything is Brahman. So, with this little change, he was able to bring back the Vedic culture. And of course, he also had good Brahmanas. He also had the good quality Brahmanas to support him and to preach this philosophy. So in this way, the Buddhist philosophy was kicked out of India. But the Mayavada philosophy itself is not the real answer. It is not the absolute truth. It is simply presenting the Mayavada, the philosophy of Buddhism in a covered form. It is also a type of atheism. Because if everything is one, then there's no meaning to being God anymore. God has no position. Because everyone is God. So, you know, Krishna comes in this world, oh, he is a manifestation of Brahman. But we're also a manifestation of Brahman, so there's no difference. So, of course, people like this idea, you know, yeah, we're all God. Very nice. I always wanted to be God. I'm very, very happy to know that I'm really God, you know. So that is why, you know, when people, Mayavada philosopher, people like Vivekananda go to America, people think, oh, this is wonderful. We're all God. Very nice. Until they get a toothache or a stomachache and they have to run to the dentist and the doctor and they realize, you know, being God is not such a joke anymore. However, yeah, you know, after Shankaracharya, then the Vaishnavacharyas came and they preached the real Siddhanta of the Vedic teachings. They brought the Vaishnava philosophy that it's not simply one soul, but there are two souls. There is the Atma and the Paramatma, and the eternal distinction between the Lord and the living entities. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, after the Vaishnava Acharyas came, then Mahaprabhu came and he synthesized the sampradayas and took the basic elements from each of the sampradayas and brought them together into our own sampradaya, in this Gaudiya Vaishnava sampradaya. So this is the history of India. This is the history of the Vedic culture. Everyone knows this, that the Buddhism was defeated, they were driven out of India, and they went into all the atheistic countries where there's no concept of God. It wasn't absolute eternal philosophy, it was an emergency situation which had arisen. And similarly with this Mayavada philosophy which Lord Shiva is propagating, you know, he's doing it just to, why is this Mayavada philosophy there? It takes away the bad elements from the Vaishnava sampradayas. That those people who are inclined to all types of irreligious habits, who don't want to bathe regularly, who are inclined towards intoxication and all types of impure habits, then they can go and imitate Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva himself, he's not an ordinary person. Don't think for a minute that we can ever imitate Lord Shiva. He is almost the Lord himself. The relationship between Lord Shiva and Lord Vishnu is like that between yogurt and milk. So milk can be made into yogurt, but yogurt never itself becomes milk. So Lord Shiva is almost God. He's not an ordinary jiva. We can come up to, as ordinary jivas, we may go to the position of Lord Brahma, but we don't take the position of Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva is very special. So here in the verse today, we're reading about foolish people who want to imitate the behavior of Lord Shiva with their long matted locks and wearing garlands of bones and skulls and drinking intoxication and smoking ganja. But it is pointed out that Lord Shiva also drank an ocean of poison. So, can anyone else drink an ocean of poison? You know, they like to imitate Lord Shiva. Why don't they try to drink also an ocean of poison? Of course, that they cannot do. So, we should not try to imitate Lord Shiva, but we should appreciate his exalted position. There is a reason why he behaves like this. Again, I said, it's to take out these bad elements from this pure, from the Vaishnava Sampradayas. That these people who want to be atheistic, they can have their own Sampradaya. Sampradaya of atheism, you see. And they can spread this Mayavada doctrine. But this is not the highest truth. The absolute truth is the eternal distinction between the Lord and the living entity. And this is brought about, if one studies the Vedic literature, all the Vedas declare this. And the Vaishnava Acharyas, they have studied all of these scriptures, presented all these. The six Goswamis, they are also described. Nana Shastra Vicharinai Kanipano Sagdharma Samtapako. That they studied all the revealed scriptures with the aim of establishing eternal religious principles. So this is what we get from the Goswamis of Vrindavan and all the Vaishnava Acharyas. They teach us about the Vedic principles, that the importance of following principles like cleanliness, mercy, austerity, and truthfulness. These are the basic pillars of religion. Srimad Bhagavatam describes how religion in the form of a bull, Dharma, stands on four legs. And these legs represent cleanliness, mercy, austerity, and truthfulness. Where there is no mercy, then people will engage in eating all kinds of impure foods, animal flesh, and so on. Where there is no austerity, then people will indulge in intoxication. Not only marijuana and ganja, but all kinds of alcohol and so on, intoxicants. Even they may be legal by government standard, by scriptures, they're not legal. So there's the law of God, which is higher than the law of the state. You may say, no, we pay our taxes, the government allows us. But the government of God does not allow such things to go unpunished. Another principle is this, the principle of cleanliness. That just simply bathing regularly in the Kali Yuga, for people to just bathe regularly, they have to be very religious and pious. Prabhupada was thinking when he went to America that, oh, America will be an opulent country, materially advanced. And he was surprised when he came to New York that people didn't even have a place to bathe in their own home. Yeah, he was thinking, you know, this is supposed to be advanced country, and people don't even have somewhere to bathe. But in India, he knew that even the poorest man will bathe in the street every day and wash their cloth. But Western countries, people can't even do that. So where is the advancement? You see. So these principles in Kali Yuga, these atheistic principles become so common. No regard for cleanliness, impure habits, taking any kind of food, and then also intoxication. If you say to someone, why do you take this, why do you drink this alcohol? They say, oh, the environment here is so terrible that if I don't take this alcohol, I can't live here. I can't survive living in this city with all the atmosphere, the pollution and the economic stress, that unless I take my alcohol, unless I have my bottle of wine or whatever, then I can't survive. I don't have the determination to go on working. So this is the ignorance of people in Kali Yuga. And this is also found sometimes in spiritual paths. The so-called followers of Lord Shiva, they also engage in these types of irreligious habits. Lord Shiva himself, as we said, why he would do these things? It's one reason why Lord Shiva behaves in this way is that he doesn't want materialistic people to disturb him. That Lord Shiva is the greatest devotee. It is, the scriptures say, Srimad Bhagavatam declares, Vaishnavam Yata Shambhu, that he's the greatest, the most exalted of all the devotees of Lord Vishnu. His mind is always meditating on the lotus feet of Lord Sankarshan. So Lord Shiva is an exalted Vaishnava. But he does not want to be disturbed by so many materialistic people. Many materialistic people often want to disturb him. You know, if there's a saintly person, you'll often find materialistic people will want to come and disturb them. Within our own sampradaya, there was one great Vaishnava Acharya, Gorkishordas Babaji. He was also troubled sometimes by materialistic people. So they would not disturb him. He moved into the public toilet and he was doing his bhajan, chanting his japa while living in a public toilet. And in this way, materialistic people would not like to come and see him and disturb him. He's not anxious to give blessings, you see. So, in the same way, Lord Shiva, he decorates himself with such things as skulls and matted locks and snakes and smokes ganja and so on. And in this way, he will keep away, will discourage materialistic people from approaching him. So are there any questions on this verse? Anything we can clarify? Yes?
You said that Lord Shiva avoids all materialistic people, but we find that Shaivites are like the worshippers of Lord Shiva are more opulent than worshippers of Lord Vishnu. If he avoids all the materialists, then how can they be more opulent?
Yes, Lord Shiva, you know, the devotees of Lord Shiva tend to be materially wealthy. Yes, that is Lord Shiva giving. He has. There are two potencies from Lord Shiva. One is his real blessing and one is his trickery. So he gives material blessings. That is his tricking. You know, when he will give some material blessing to people, they're satisfied. They've got some wealth. They've got some material power. And in this way they're happy. They don't bother him anymore. They just want some material blessings. They want to enjoy the material world. So he tricks them like that. He gives them their material boons. He's easily pleased, huh? He's Asutosh. He's easily pleased. He will give his material blessing. And that way he doesn't have to, you know, they're satisfied, they've got what they want, and he's free. He can go on meditating on the Supreme Lord. But he does not give them the highest boon, which is the love of God. That he gives for his special devotees. The real mercy of Lord Shiva is when he gives them love of God. When he gives them knowledge about the Supreme Lord who he is meditating on. So Lord Shiva, he has his own Vaishnava Sampradaya. There is one disciplic succession also from Lord Shiva. Vishnu Swami is a prominent acharya there. So that is the real blessing of Lord Shiva. When he will bring you consciousness of the Supreme Lord and your relationship as a servant of God. Not when he will just simply give some material boon to satisfy your senses and your material life. That he can do easily. So he does that easily. And then he doesn't have to take any more trouble. So if you want the cheating potency, then you worship Lord Shiva and get some material boon. But if you want the real mercy of Lord Shiva, that is to awaken God consciousness.
In the course of your lecture, you mentioned that how this transition takes place, the Brahmanas getting corrupted and then Shankara appearing, propounding the philosophy of Mayavada, and then the Vaishnava Acharyas defeat Mayavada and the eternal principles of religion, Vaishnavism established. But we find the eternal deceptive succession is always there, right? The Vaishnavas were there at the time of Shankaracharya. Vaishnavas were there at the time when Buddha propounded this Buddhist theory. So how do we understand that?
Yeah. The Vaishnavas were there, but very small, very few in number, and they were not able to preach much. You see? There was not that everybody became a Buddhist, but Buddhism became prominent. It became very prominent. And the numbers of people actually following Vaishnavism were very small, very few in number. The religious principles were covered. Everyone became influenced. They were all caught up. Even you go to Mathura, and the Mathura Museum, it is full of Buddhist statues, Buddhist idols, Buddhist statues. The capital, one of the capitals of Buddhism was Mathura. Mathura is the birthplace of Lord Krishna, you know. And even we know, we go to Mathura, you know, we see the birth of the Janmasthan and everything. But if you go in the museum, you see so many Buddhas. It used to be the capital of Buddhism. How did it happen? Yeah. Still there were devotees of Krishna there, but the prominent thing was the Buddhism. It became so prominent. Well, someone has asked, we heard that Lord Rama worshipped Lord Shiva before building the bridge for his worship. He worshipped Lord Shiva to get Lord Shiva's blessings before building the bridge to Lanka. If this is true, then how the Supreme Lord is worshipping Lord Shiva? Yes. This is explained that one answer, Prabhupada said, Lord Rama was telling Lord Shiva, I'm going to kill your devotee. Another answer is that when Lord Rama worships Lord Shiva, he worships the Lord in the heart of Lord Shiva. Who is actually the Lord in the heart of Shiva? That is the Lord, the Supreme Lord himself. Just like there's a story that one time a Vaishnava Brahmana was approached by a Shivite, that this Shivite Kshatriya, he ordered this Vaishnava Brahman, I want you to worship this Shiva Linga for me and offer prayers to Lord Shiva on my behalf. But the Vaishnava says, I'm a devotee of Lord Vishnu, I only worship Lord Vishnu. So the Shivite said, I will kill you if you do not. You have to do this. I'm ordering you to do it. Otherwise, I'll chop off your head. So the Vaishnava began to offer prayers to the Shiva Linga, but he offered prayers to Vishnu. He offered prayers to Vishnu while he was worshipping the Shiva Linga. And the Kshatriya understood that he's offering prayers. This Shivite understood that this Brahmana is offering prayers to Vishnu. He drew his sword, he was ready to kill him, and Lord Nrisingadev came out of the Shiva Linga and personally killed that Shivite. Yeah, Lord Nrisingadev came out from the Shiva Linga. How did Lord Nrisingadev come out from the Shiva Linga? Because Lord Vishnu is in the heart of Lord Shiva. So when Lord Rama was worshipping Shiva, he is worshipping the Lord in the heart of Shiva. Another reason is also he's instructing the common people in the importance of worshipping Lord Shiva. He's instructing common people that this is important, that they should do this. Lord Rama teaches by example, and he wants to teach them that they should do this. Because the Lord gave Lord Shiva a blessing that his devotees would be more than him, that he would be worshipped more than him. So Lord Rama personally shows the importance of worshipping Lord Shiva. So these are some different answers to this question. Yes? What should our approach be to Lord Shiva? He's the greatest Vaishnava. So yeah, I mean, we need his blessings. We certainly pray to Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva, he also controls the false ego. So we can pray to him to help him to conquer over our false ego. Lord Shiva has that power. He can give us the strength to conquer over our subtle body composed of the mind and ego. And that's very important before we go back to Godhead. In order to go back to Godhead, we have to get free of both the gross and the subtle body. So Lord Shiva, because he is in control of the ego, he can give us that blessing to conquer over our ego, that we can become freed from the influence of the subtle body and engage fully in the Lord's service. So we can approach Lord Shiva like this. In Navadvip Dham, there's also a place in Navadvip Dham where Lord Shiva comes and chants the holy name of the Lord in the ear of anyone who's leaving their body in that place. In that place, I think it's called Hamsa, is it? There's a Hariharshetra. It's in Hariharshetra. So at that place, it said Lord Shiva personally comes and he chants the name of the Supreme Lord in the ear of anyone who is leaving their body in that place. So like that, we can pray to Lord Shiva. You know, he's a great Vaishnava. We definitely should pray to all the great devotees. And certainly Lord Shiva can give us so much blessing to help us to conquer over this ego, this ahankar. Like that. We offer all our respects to Lord Shiva. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went to many of the famous Shiva temples and offered respects and also chanted the holy name. Lord Shiva also likes to hear the chanting of the holy name. He also likes to hear Srimad Bhagavatam. The story goes that one time Lord Shiva wanted to hear Gaura Katha, and he came on Lord Brahma's swan, because his Nandi was too slow, so he got off from Lord Brahma's swan. He got off of his own Nandi and he got on Lord Brahma's swan, and he came flying in on Lord Brahma's swan to hear Gaura Katha. So you know, this is Lord Shiva. His eagerness to hear the pastimes of the Supreme Lord, to hear Gaura Katha, to hear Bhagavat Katha, and like that. So we should pray that we can also develop that same eagerness. Yes, Prabhu. Oh, do Lord Shiva and Mother Parvati need Lakshmi to give boons to them? Huh? Your question?
Is Lord Shiva empowered by Mother Lakshmi to give material boons?
Well, his own wife is the empowerment, Mother Durga, because she controls the material nature. So, if you please Lord Shiva, Mother Durga is so happy, she bestows her blessings on people. It's not that Lord Shiva has to be empowered or anything. Mother Durga herself goes because she sees that they're worshipping my husband so nicely. So she will satisfy all their desires.
Mother Durga has the powers.
Yeah, Mother Durga has that power. She controls material nature. Okay. Yes, she's very powerful. And she's the expansion of Radharani.
Hare Krishna.
Shiva in Yoga Peet, in Mayapur we have yoga just behind the tree.
In the holy dam, why do we have Lord Shiva's linga there?
Is it a part of Gaudiya's tradition to have Shiva worship also?
Because Lord Shiva is Kshetrapal. He protects the holy dam. That's his service. In Vrindavan also, in Mathura Mandal, you'll see there's four or five different Shiva lingas in different places there. And Lord Shiva protects the holy dam. So that's his service there. Before we do the Navadvip Dham Parikram, we first of all go to the Janmasthan. And the reason why we go to the Janmasthan is because Bhaktivinod Thakur installed the Shiva Linga there. And we go there to get the blessings from Lord Shiva that we can enter into the holy Dham. And that he will allow us to circumambulate the holy places in the Dham. So Lord Shiva, he is the protector and guardian of the holy Dham. Just like, you know, you keep some security guard somewhere like that. So Lord Shiva, you know, you see what a humble Vaishnava he is. He takes the service for the Supreme Lord, guarding the holy place, not to let any intruders come in there. So with the blessings of Lord Shiva only, we can perform parikram in these holy places. That's why the Shiva Linga is there. To remind us that Lord Shiva is protecting, and we come and take his permission first. And with his blessings only, then we can see properly all of these holy places. And Lord Chaitanya also did this when he came to Mathura Mandal. Lord Shiva also is Gopeshwara Shiva, that he is also, he can take the position of being a gopi. He's so exalted devotee that he can also be in the controller of the gopis, in charge of the gopis.
How do we understand that he's giving this cheap material benediction to the materialistic people?
You have to say it again now. Now you've got the mic. Let's hear it, because I couldn't hear it.
Sorry. My question is, Lord Shiva is Param Vaishnava, the supremest Vaishnava. And Vaishnava's mercy is to bring that soul to Krishna's lotus feet. We see in the instance of Srila Prabhupada, when some materialistic people approached him for benediction, he showed his saffron dress and told, "This is my benediction to you." Or he showed his sannyas disciples and told, "This is my benediction." So why does Lord Shiva give some cheap material benediction to materialistic people? Is there any specific service, or how do you understand that?
Now they approach Lord Shiva for their material blessings. You know, they want these boons. They don't want the greatest mercy of Lord Shiva. You see? Just like when Prabhupada, you said Prabhupada showed people the saffron dress, but they didn't want it. They ran away, right? You know? They didn't say, "Oh yes, give me that. I want that," you know? No, they ran away. They said, "No, we don't want that. We don't want to be those. We want your material blessings." So they want these material boons. So Lord Shiva fulfills these material boons. At least they develop some faith in Lord Shiva. And as they become more intelligent, then they may think that why I should take something temporary and material, maybe he can give me something higher. So that is the Vedic understanding. The Vedas are arranged like that. You can approach the demigods, you can fulfill get material benedictions. But then we should think that why I should simply take some temporary material benediction. Maybe there's something higher above all that. And there is. But we have to be more aware and more qualified and willing to receive that. When we become disappointed with all of our material boons and they no longer have the same meaning to us, when we see through all of the limited pleasures of material life, then we look for something higher, some alternative. So then Lord Shiva's greatest mercy is there. Lord Shiva is the greatest Vaishnava. One reason was he drank the ocean of poison. That was certainly compassion. Another reason is he's giving shelter to so many people in the mode of ignorance. So many people, the ghosts and hobgoblins and so on, they get the blessings of Lord Shiva. He's kind to them. That is his why he's so exalted. And also because he's got the blessing of the Supreme Lord also. He's very dear to the Supreme Lord. He's so dear that the Supreme Lord blesses him that his devotees will be even more than his own. Why? Because the Lord wants people to know the greatness of Lord Shiva. That Lord Shiva is always meditating on the lotus feet of Lord Sankarshan. And he is giving shelter, as we said, to all of these people in Tamagun. He is giving them mercy. The people in the graveyards and so on. And the crematoriums, the burning ghats, you know, they can take shelter of Lord Shiva and get benefited by Lord Shiva's association. Okay, last question. Yes? Oh. There are many worshippers inside that. And what? Yeah? Huh? What's her? Who are they actually worshipping? Whom? I don't know. You have to ask them. You know. We know who we're worshipping. I mean, that's the important thing. Yeah. I don't know about them. Okay, there's one person there. He had a question. Yes, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna, Maharaj. Maharaj, like Daksha Prajapati, in materially, he's very exalted position, you can say, in the hierarchy. But how does he is ignorant of the position of Lord Shiva?
Who?
Daksha Prajapati.
Daksha. How is he ignorant? Yeah. Well, it's not that he's totally ignorant. The problem is, you know, he's proud of his own position. He's infatuated with pride of his own position, that he's being respected by so many other demigods. And he's also thinking that Lord Shiva's married to my daughter. So because he's married to my daughter, I'm his superior and he should respect me. You know, it's one of these family intrigues, you know. Family life is full of these kind of problems. Married people probably know all about it. And even Lord Shiva has his own little problems. You can see, even your Lord Shiva, you know, you take a wife, you know, you get problems. So Daksha, yeah, he's fallen into this illusion, his own pride. He's become so proud of his own position. He thinks he's even greater, that he's more important than Lord Shiva. And this is a problem. This is the problem with a little pride. Pride comes before the fall. So it's something everyone has to be aware of. This is a demonic mentality. We become very proud. We think I'm a very important person. We should always be aware of our insignificance. And even in the heavenly planets, pride is there. Just think. You take a big position in the heavenly planets, and certainly you can become very proud. Lord Brahma also says, even Lord Brahma sometimes starts to think that maybe he's the supreme. Because people approach him. They think, oh, that, you know, you are the first person, you are the original person, you are the cause of the creation. And Lord Brahma starts to sometimes think that he is the Supreme Lord. So he always has to check himself. He has to keep himself humble. He has to remember his actual position in relation to the Supreme Lord. So we have to remember Lord Chaitanya's instruction. That we are simply the tiny servant It's very easy to be illusioned, to become proud. Prabhupada was telling one devotee, he was in charge of the Los Angeles temple, and he was telling him, he said, you know, this material creation is only 1/4 compared to the whole spiritual sky. And in this material creation, there are countless universes. And among these countless universes, there's one universe which we are here. And within this one universe, there are countless planets. And there's one tiny planet, Earth. And on this one tiny planet, Earth, there's one little country, America. And in America, there's so many cities, and there's one city there called Los Angeles. And in Los Angeles, there are so many streets and homes. And on this, there's this one street called Watsika Boulevard. And on this Watsika Boulevard, it's a very long street, and there are so many buildings and so many homes. But there's one ISKCON temple there. And this one person thinks he's the manager, because he's the manager of this one temple, that he's in charge of the whole cosmic creation. Yeah. So like that, you know, you have to be careful. You know, pride is such a thing that, you know, how much more powerful it is in the heavenly planets, you know, for Daksha to be there in charge, you know, and all the devas are respecting you and bowing before you, you know, even Brahma and so on, you know, they're all respecting you. So it's there, you can become illusioned and offend the great Vaishnavas. And the result was, you know, he got the head of a goat very soon. The curse of Lord of Nandeshwara came to happen. So we should also, it warns about the danger, because Daksha's business is sex. He's entangled with sex. His business is procreating the universe. And sex is a very powerful thing that creates a lot of illusion if it is not handled very carefully. Sex is allowed, it's not prohibited. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says, Dharma Varuda Buddhishu Kamosmi Bharatasabha, that I am that sex life which is not against religious principles. So sex is allowed for religious principles to create progeny. But if it becomes just simply a business of sense gratification, then it is very bad, very sinful. So Daksha had also become affected by that, and this was another cause of his pride. So you have to be very careful, even in the heavenly planets. Okay, we will stop now. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki. Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Yeah.